Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
All right, Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, how was your weekend?
It was fabulous. You know, Holly flew back in from California, and we went to a jazz concert Friday night. Our good buddy over at the World Trade Center, Lilia, I can never say her last name, but Lilia.
Lilia P.
She set us up with some great tickets to see some, I don't even know how to describe it, Cuban jazz maybe?
Over at the Rialto.
Yeah, it was Tiempo Libre. I didn't understand a word they said, but it was a fantastic concert. Had a great time. We rested up on Sunday, and then here we are.
Here we are. Big show today.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. We have a studio full. And first up on Atlanta Business Radio, please join me in welcoming President with Pinnacle Search Partners, Ms. Mary Elizabeth Sod. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you on the show. Search Partners, what are you searching for?
We are a global executive search, mostly leadership positions for industrial manufacturing and a variety of cross-functional positions at most any type of organization.
But primarily in manufacturing?
Primarily manufacturing is where we started, but now we're in technology, services, life sciences. We've branched out quite a bit.
Now, how did that pivot take place?
You know, to be honest with you, I sort of followed my network. I used to work at GE Plastics and then Mobil Chemical, and as my network expanded past industrial manufacturing, I followed those folks, and really finding executive talent was more important than a specific industry niche.
Uh-huh.
And why did you start the firm? Did you get the entrepreneurial bug, or you just had enough of the routine? What compelled you to get going on this?
To be honest with you, I did not have the entrepreneurial bug, but I found that there was a need for a fresh approach in the marketplace. And I think some of the big firms, as well as some of the smaller ones, weren't really customizing the approach. And so what we did is we came up with a model that allows us to be an extension of our clients. What we want to do is go in and learn how to be the eyes and ears to our clients in the marketplace, to go out and learn the culture and the values and then become a part of our customer story. And when we talk to candidates, we have to be that story. We have to tell the story and be that, sell that passion in the marketplace so we can attract the best people to them.
So you really kind of have to understand your client's culture, right, to find the right fit.
And exactly.
And I guess some of the other firms are more transactional and they're just looking for bodies that meet certain resume profiles.
Well, I don't think that they would appreciate me saying that.
But I'll say it. You said it.
But, you know, quite frankly, I think you can find a job spec. But the people that are going to stay on the job for the long haul are going to meet a job spec. And then they're also going to meet a value and a culture match.
Right.
And that's a very important part of the job.
So I'm interested to know how you go about recruiting recruiters because, I'm certain that to do it well at the level that you're doing it, the way you want to do it, you've got to have people that can really have meaningful, substantive conversations with candidates, be able to read them, and then also be able to really get some insight pretty quickly with a customer. I mean, these people are not just filling the halls. How do you recruit a recruiter?
That's a very good question. How do you recruit a recruiter? I think there's an intuition. You've got to learn how to hire people with a common sense, hire people with intuition. And at our firm, I think we try to deliver an experience. So for our clients, it's not just a recruiting you're not hiring a recruiter, you're hiring somebody that's going to deliver an experience, somebody that will be that extension of you, know what you have to sell. But one common theme you'll find with everybody you talk to at Pinnacle Search Partners is we don't take what we do for a living lightly. And it's so sincere. We take it a privilege that we get to be a part of filling your team and your executive leadership. And it's a privilege that we get to be a part of somebody's life decision and where they go to work.
Now, when you're looking for the senior leadership, don't most of them already have jobs?
Yes, and that's a very interesting point you make. I think the reason we'll always be in business is most good talent needs to be headhunted. Most good talent is not waving their resume. They're not out there looking.
So you're not using Monster?
No.
Craigslist. No, those aren't the places you use to find your...
No. We get paid to go find the passive candidate, the one that's out there doing their job. We get paid to find the hard-to-find person. But then once you find the hard-to-find person, what differentiates us, I think, is, first of all, we can do it anywhere in the world. We have a global alliance partnership. But we're going to find the hard-to-find person, but then we're going to know well enough about our client how to attract them. Mm-hmm. Like I said, cast that vision. Know what excellence looks like to our client, but then attract that person and really be able to tell the story and pull them away from what they're doing if it matches what's a good fit for them.
Now, what would be a tip for maybe a middle manager that to get on your radar, to get on a recruiter's radar? What are some of the things that they have to be doing so that you can kind of identify them as an up-and-comer who might fit into a slot?
Well, being well-networked. I mean, again, we're not in the business of placing candidates. We're in the business of searching for talent.
Right, you're matchmaking, right?
Right. Right. So we're searching for talent. So the way we network, we don't generally find anybody through a job board, as you mentioned. So we network. We find somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting when I ask, if I were to ask you, who do you know that's a CTO? You might say, I don't know anybody who's looking. And I'll say, I didn't ask who's looking. I asked, who do you know that's really good?
Uh-huh.
And so we network. And so I just ask, who do you know that's really great at what they do? I want to network with them.
And then are you using like the associations or are these candidates typically active in associations? Are they in leadership positions? Are they writing things? Like, are you looking online?
Sometimes. I mean, there are a variety of different media that where people are active, but sharp people know sharp people. So mm-hmm. we network for a living. Our job is just to be in the pulse of the marketplace and know sharp people that know people.
So what's the best way to handle that call? Like if I were to get that call, okay, maybe not a great example, but just for play, let's say I got that call tomorrow from a headhunter. What are some ways that I should handle that? And maybe one or two things I should not do in that first call as a candidate or someone with talent.
Well, I'm sure you do get those calls all the time. I would say, you know what, most talented individuals have gotten that call. They've probably been placed by a recruiter, and they've probably used a recruiter, so they're not naive to the process. So I think make the time to take the phone call. Make the time to return the call. You never know when your dream job goes on the market, and you want to be aware of it. Excuse me. But also, I think the best time to make a great career decision is when you don't have to. So keep an ear to the ground. Be open to those phone calls. Make the time. And then you don't have to be out there actively pursuing your next job change because they'll come to you.
Now, why do big companies use firms? Don't they have their own HR department?
Yes.
But they still use outside boutique firms?
Yes, absolutely. For a variety of different reasons, mostly because we're going to go in and interview them and say, what does excellence look like to you?
Mm-hmm.
And when I find out what that looks like, I can be their eyes and ears, like I mentioned earlier, and then we can go scour the talent market. And then with a sense of urgency, find that best available talent and bring it back in. We can save them time. We network for a living. They go sell their product and service for a living.
Right.
So you got this thing off the ground in 2010.
Yes.
And so are we on plan? Are we on goal here? Are we accomplishing what you set out to accomplish?
We have been very pleased with the response in the marketplace to our desire to have a unique and fresh approach. We've doubled sales. We've doubled headcount. We've expanded globally. We have this formal partnership where we literally can place people in every country in the world. We've been awarded a Women Business Enterprise, which is a very nice distinction. So we are way on
target.
What
is that? Why don't you talk a little bit about that and why that's important to your firm?
You know, it's important because there are companies that value the minority certification, and being a women-owned business enterprise is valued by some government companies and big public companies.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're part of this organization of women business owners as well, right? Could you speak
exactly
a little bit to that, if you will, what that's about and why you chose to be part of that organization?
You know, I think I chose to be a part of it because it's an opportunity to network with other people that are equally as passionate to make an impact in some places where it's not as easy to have an entry. So I think it's a differentiator and just helps make us a little bit more unique.
So now that you've been entrepreneur for several years now, is it how you imagine it?
It's never easy. It's always fun.
It's never easy, always fun.
So how would you go about, what advice would you offer to someone thinking about hiring a recruiter? Like, do you even know what questions to ask, Lee, someone that we might hire as a recruiter to recruit for us?
Right.
I mean, I don't even know what to add. I don't know a good one when I see it.
Would I make you come to my company to see what our culture is like and to kind of really understand it at a deeper level?
Well, if I didn't, you shouldn't hire me.
Oh, really?
It's my
That's
opinion.
A knockout?
In my opinion, I think you should hire somebody that wants to get to know you so well that they can be you. If I can't be you in the marketplace, how can I attract for you?
Right.
So my answer to your question is I think you should hire somebody that will invest the time on your behalf to learn enough about you to go be you in the marketplace and go find what you would find if that was your full-time job.
Then can you walk us through what an engagement looks like? Like, say a company has this pain and they reach out to you. What does that initial conversation look like?
I would come in and I would bring one of the key associates that I would work with. And that's something that's unique, again, to us is who I bring in to meet with you is who's going to work the search. We don't push it down to somebody that doesn't know you.
Right.
We will come in. We'll interview you. We'll find out what are your specifications for the job. What's your culture? What's your values? What does success look like? What's failed here? And we'll be very painfully thorough in an effort to save you time. And then we'll develop a process that is specific to what's a reflection of what you need, what's your timing, why is it open? And then we'll engage. We work on an engagement fee basis. So you'll engage with us with a retainer. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, we'll put together some timing. We'll target companies that we're going to recruit from. We'll target companies you don't want us to recruit from. And then we'll work with your human resources people to put together the process that makes sense and deliver.
Now, do you help us kind of craft the compensation? Like, wouldn't you know, like, best practices a little
yes.
more than I would because you have a kind of a broader perspective?
Yes. If you want to hire a chief marketing officer and you give me a price point that is not going to attract the talent you said you wanted, I will be the first one to tell
You'll
you.
You'll say, no, that's not going to work.
I'll tell you why it's open.
Now, would you also, do you work with startups at all?
We do. We have private equity. We have startup. We have large global. We have you name it.
So like if somebody said, I need a CTO and I don't want to give them equity, you would say, look, if you want a person like that, you're going to have to give them equity. You'd be able to kind of counsel in that area?
It depends. It's different in every situation. But if it's startup, if you're asking somebody to take on a lot of risk, mm-hmm. they typically are going to want to look for they're going to want some kind of return.
Right.
And it's different in somebody's season of life, but you've got to give me something to sell to them. Depending on what you're trying to
do. But you can help counsel me.
Absolutely.
Right?
I can tell you what people, if you tell me what you're looking for, I'm going to tell you what they're looking for.
Right.
So what are some changes or trends that you started to witness since 2010? Have things changed even in that short period of time?
Yes, they have. I mean, I've been in the search business for 17 years now, and I will tell you since 2010, well, one thing that hasn't changed for as long as I've been around is that, as we mentioned earlier, the hard-to-find candidates still need to be recruited. They need to be headhunted. They're probably not out there waving the resume around. The one you want to find may not be actively looking, but you still want to attract them. So you need a headhunter for that. The other things are, in the last 3 to 5 years, people are working longer. They're retiring later. So you've got people in their 60s and 70s working. They're staying on the job longer. I think mobility, and this may be a reflection of our global reach, the talent mobility is very important. I think the pace of change is crazy fast and will continue to be. And then one other thing, I see companies being less tolerant of hiring people that aren't perfectly qualified. And I see companies less tolerant of hiring people that don't fit their culture because they're tired of having to rehire every 18 months.
Right.
So it makes my job so important that I get that right for you.
Right. That's critical. I mean, that's why I'm investing in you, I would think.
Exactly.
Now, you mentioned the alliance that helps you serve internationally. What else would you describe, would you characterize as something that sets you apart in the marketplace and enables you to maybe secure business that other firms don't get?
I think the global, we're boutique, so we can be very nimble and we can customize. We've got the global piece of it. And I think the people at Pinnacle, I think because we have that sense of urgency, that commitment, that a piece of integrity, we will make it happen. We're results focused. We have a 97% repeat business with our clients.
Wow.
I mean, it's fantastic. When people hire us, they come back. But I think it's the people at Pinnacle. You'll find that theme of we want to deliver an experience.
Right.
We want to deliver excellence. And we just don't take it lightly. It's a privilege.
Now, are your clients, you mentioned you have a global alliance. Are your clients do you have a bunch of clients here in Atlanta and the world, or in the world and some in Atlanta?
To be honest with you, we are all over the United States. Most of our clients are U.S.-based, and when they need to hire outside of the United States, we feel they're global. They're mostly global companies that when they hire in China, when they hire in Russia, when they hire in Brazil, we do that work. Now, through the Global Alliance, we also fill some non-U.S.-based positions for the Global Alliance.
So you're based here in Atlanta, but your business
is everywhere. Exactly.
And your sales and marketing process, it's so relationship-oriented. This is not a transactional kind of thing. And what that tells me is on the backside, on the other side of the table, it suggests to me that if I do get that call from a recruiter, I should keep that relationship, because you should always have a good relationship with a good recruiter, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yes, I think so. Why not?
Do you have one, the recruiter?
Right. In case someone calls you?
I have 9 of them that I love.
And are you actively trying to grow the business? Are you looking at expanding your team? Are you pretty settled right now for that?
You know, my door is always open for great talent. But I can tell you specifically what fits at Pinnacle. People that are builders, people that want to build a company. I mean, we're 3 years old, and we have had tremendous growth, but we're building. When we stop building, we'll be dead. So builders, people that have a passion for excellence, people that are, we have an ambition about us that is a theme of the company. So ambitious people that are vivacious and cast a vision, and without that, they wouldn't fit. So business development people, yes. Recruiters, researchers, my door is absolutely always open, but the culture fit is the most important part that I'm going to weed people in or out.
So you're always going to have your eyes open for talent, but the call that you really like to get, the next call you want to get, is from an organization that could profit from your services.
Absolutely.
So what's the best way for them to reach out and touch base with you and have a conversation on this topic? Phone number, website, whatever the right coordinates are.
PinnacleSearch.com would be the website, or they could reach out to me directly at 404-786-8486. Or contact any of the folks they see on the website. Again, PinnacleSearch.com is our website.
Well, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
Hey, you going to hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely. I met them, and I thoroughly enjoyed them.
Uh-oh, is he going to have a new job after this interview?
That or I have a new client.
Well, next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have Vice President with Novellus. He is a financial planning and analysis genius. Is that fair to say? Please welcome to the show, Stephen Pohl. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Well, did you learn anything in that last segment?
I did. It was quite interesting.
Well, I know you want to, but you cannot be WBE certified. There are just some things you can't get done.
That would be true.
But you can aspire to some of the other great things that they've achieved. Give us a little bit of overview, if you would, mission and purpose of Novellus.
Yeah, so Novellus is a global manufacturer of rolled aluminum products. And our industries are really targeted at the can industry, and also we're increasing our presence in the automotive industry today, and then other industrial applications of aluminum.
And you're watching the money.
I watch the money, correct.
So how's that industry doing?
We're actually doing quite well. We've had a great run the last couple years, and the interesting thing about aluminum is that it's a very environmentally friendly product. So it has an infinite life cycle. It can be recycled for a long, long, long time, and it really helps with the issues of the world today.
Now, you've traveled around the world, right?
Correct.
In your job. How is the business culture different in the different countries you've been to?
Well, business is done different everywhere in every part of the world, but some of the things that are very common first are people relationships. Without developing strong people relationships, it's really hard to get anything done. And then some of the things that are different is learning how to communicate, particularly when you're working in a different language or what's not the primary language for the individual you're trying to talk to.
How do you deal with that?
You be patient. Sometimes you have to go over things several times. You have to watch body language, make sure that you can see what's coming back from them. It definitely helps to understand a little bit of the culture where you're working at, or where you're doing business at. I've lived in 3 different countries as well, and all of them have been quite different. Learning how to
what,
work with
what
those
countries.
I lived in Mexico, Querétaro, Mexico. I lived in Paris, France, and I lived in Geneva, Switzerland.
Now, do you find that just talking louder helps?
And slow. Loud and slow, right?
Is that a good strategy?
You know, I've seen people do translations, and they'll start...
Maybe wave your hands more.
And they'll start talking very, very loud, and you'll hear, we're not deaf, but we just need you to slow down. So, no, talking loud doesn't help, but usually speaking slower, and sometimes using, you know, hand motions. If you're in Italy, hand motions work. But... you know, the basic stuff. It's all common sense.
I mean, this is a very real and meaningful conversation to us because we're expanding as we continue to replicate and put studios in different places, including we want them in other countries. And, you know, he and I have talked many a time, you know, do we get someone kind of as part of an advanced team just to help us go learn the lay of the land, even in like England where, you know, I can still order a steak and a beer in my own language and get it across. But there's a lot of cultural stuff and... do you find yourself doing that, getting locals there to kind of guide you through?
I've done some business development work in some other countries, particularly in Central Europe. And really the best way, most of the countries that you're going to want to go to are going to have some sort of business development group that's part of the government organization.
Because they want you to come, right?
They want you to come. And if you build a relationship with them, and they're there to help you, so it's not like you have to really, you know, push them to do that. But they'll once you make the contact, they'll reach out. And if you develop the relationship with them, they'll really help you along the way.
So that's good advice for anybody that's thinking of expanding internationally is to reach out to the
government. There's help out there.
Correct.
Now, you recently, you're a graduate of La Roche College in Pittsburgh.
Then
you were recently named a member of their Distinguished Alumni Circle. Can you talk a little bit about that?
How much does that cost? No, I'm kidding.
How many donations was that? To get that distinction.
Well, I don't know if the donation factor weighed into it at all, but it probably helped. It was quite a great honor for me. La Roche had just celebrated its 50th anniversary as a college. It was developed and started in 1963. It's a small Catholic college university in western Pennsylvania. And as part of the 50th year jubilee, they... inaugurated 50 alumni into the Distinguished Alumni Group, as they've designated it.
So when you left the college, you graduated, and you went to work, you always stayed connected to the college?
On and off the years, I went in and out. I've graduated from college in a few years ago, 1981, not to date myself, and had spent the first part of my career in Pittsburgh, so I was still connected to the college. But then as I began to move around the world, I lost a little bit of the connection. But I always, you know, like most alumni will contribute to the annual alumni fund.
Right.
When I moved back to Pennsylvania, it was in 2008, the president of the college contacted me and just invited me over for lunch one day, and we began to establish a rapport. And then they, after that, asked me to become a trustee. So I'm also a trustee of the college right now.
So has that helped your career, kind of reconnecting with La Roche?
I don't know if it helped my professional career per se. It definitely helped my what I felt like I was doing personally and my personal contributions to the world, if you will.
My wife travels a great deal domestically, like Monday through Thursday, most weeks. The last thing she wants when she gets home is to go out to dinner, which I'm ready to go out to dinner because I'm, you know, the house husband cooking up stuff for the kids. I'm thinking with as much travel as you do, the last thing you're going to do with your free time is travel. But what do you do with your free time? What do you do when you're not crunching the numbers and doing these things?
Yeah, I have two young children right now, a 9-year-old and a 10-year-old, and most of my free time is devoted to whatever their activities are right now.
Right.
Kind of takes up most of the weekends, to be quite honest with you. So, you know, the things that I like to do personally, I play some golf, I like to bike ride, I live in Chastain Park, so I like to walk through the park, walk my dog, you know, just the normal things.
And do you find yourself getting involved with associations or organizations and volunteer in some capacity as well?
I do. Right now, my son, he's 9. He's a Cub Scout, so I spend a lot of time with the Cub Scouts organization. It's PAC 1050 of Sandy Springs, right local
now,
here.
Now, it seems like giving back is an important component of your personal and business kind of life. Is there things happening at Novellus that help you do that, or are they – kind of encourage that kind of behavior?
Yeah, Novellus definitely encourages that. We have struck up relationships with a number of organizations here in Atlanta. I don't know if it would be appropriate for me to list them all. The the one that we do the most work with is the Make-A-Wish Foundation. We have a great alliance with them. We're also involved in some of the other kind of community events around. Some of them are environmental related. We just had a cleanup of a park a couple weeks back. So we're quite involved in Atlanta, and we have been increasing our presence in those activities over time. And it's definitely encouraged of our employees, which is part of that culture you look for when you join a company.
No, it's perfectly appropriate. We have to send them a bill now, but that's nobody worries about that. So what's next in the world of aluminum? Are there new types of products coming out? Because it really is, it's recyclable and recyclable. So it's a very green arena, yeah, but what else new kind of stuff's coming out of this world?
I'd say the biggest trend we're going to see change is the increase of aluminum in vehicles. And if you can, you know, do a surf on an internet and find all kinds of articles about that now. But all of the major automotive companies are looking to lightweight. It's all driven by CAFE regulations. And quite honestly, the U.S. manufacturer is a little bit behind where some of the European ones are. Mm-hmm. So that's the largest growth market that we see right now. And then the other is just a lot of growing economies where we're physically present. So Brazil, for one, we've increased capacity significantly in Brazil. And if you're following Brazil, they have the World Cup coming there. They have mm-hmm. the Olympics coming there. So a beverage can increase will be significant as that economy grows around that. And then also construction in general as they build facilities to host all of these events.
How many times can they recycle a can?
Forever.
Really? Just yeah. over and over again?
Over and over again.
And an aluminum can gets cold really quick, you know, like Coca-Cola. Okay, so the beer gets cold a lot quicker when it's in aluminum. I mean, by the time you get to the beach, it's ready. I mean, it's fantastic.
Honestly, I've never tested that, but I probably should know that.
So I had, this is your lucky day, because I have a purely patentable idea, I think. It's called Man Wrap, because many of us don't do a good job of wrapping the presents. Aluminum foil is not quite strong enough, but very pliable, very thin aluminum that you could shape around a package. What do you think?
It exists.
See that? See that?
you can buy it, I'm sure, in a local Hallmark store somewhere.
Is that
but,
right?
But there is packaging wrap made, gift wrap made out of aluminum.
Oh,
yes.
Wow. All I have to offer is the marketing. Still, though, Man Wrap, you got to admit, that's kind of a cool name.
It's a right? brand
it's a cool name, yeah.
Let me get the rights.
So where can folks go to learn more about what Novelis is up to and
if they
this?
Want have a kid, they want to get in that Cub Scout group.
That's right.
Yeah, so the Novelis, it's www.novelis.com is our website, easy to find. And the Scout Troop, I think if you just use your Google app, Pac 1050 Sandy Springs, that'll pop up as well. So we have a site also.
Well, thanks so much for coming and visiting with us, man.
Thank you.
You going to hang with us while we visit with our next guest?
I sure am.
Terrific. Well, it is now the Kevin Hour, Lee.
That's right. Nonstop Kevin
for
the rest of the
Kevin
show.
Kevin for the balance of the show. In a little bit, we're going to hear from Kevin Kinsler with Unishippers. But next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us President and CEO and author, and I really think that's mostly what we're going to talk about, from Johnson Media, Mr. Kevin Johnson. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, and you're a good friend because you like salsa. I actually play salsa, so.
Oh, really? What instrument?
Piano. We're playing at the Atlanta Jazz Festival on the international stage on Saturday.
Congratulations.
Very
Tiempo
cool.
Libre, I know them.
You know who I'm talking about.
I know who you're talking
just
about.
Just marvelous performers. I mean, I'm no dancer, you know, and I do the little bite your lip move. But they had me and my wife both, dancing in our seats. And there's this space in that theater. There's room to dance.
Yeah, I've been to concerts where they try to sit people down. They're like, this is a concert. It's not a dance show. But you got to move, right? You hear something.
Right. Can't help it.
You can't help it. So you're a Renaissance man, including you're an author. You've written a book called The Entrepreneur Mind. How screwed up is it? The Entrepreneur Mind. Tell us about it.
Wow, that's a good one. You know, we actually address, I address that in the book. And, you know, I was talking earlier with some of the guests, and we were talking about some of the elements in the book and just how contrarian you have to think to be an elite entrepreneur. So I think your lightheartedness is taken in good heart.
So now, an entrepreneur, is that somebody that is they're born an entrepreneur, or is it somebody that can be working at a job, big corporation, you know, a cog in the machine kind of person? Sure. Then all of a sudden, in this world, is very disruptive. Maybe they're laid off. Maybe they just are tired of it. They go out on their own. Is that do you see that? Is that possible?
I agree. I think that entrepreneurs can be made. A lot of discussion, a lot of debate is out there as to whether they're born. To a certain degree, I can believe that. But, you know, I think a great indication that entrepreneurs can be born is the increase in universities and colleges that are actually teaching.
Like they have degree. You can have a degree.
You can have a degree
in entrepreneurship.
That is true. And one of the colleges, Babson College, is one of the leaders in that degree in that field. So, you know, I think in addition to the increase in academia, you just have an overall excitement about entrepreneurship that is palpable.
So who did you have in mind as the reader when you were putting this thing together? And did you go about it that way? Did you envision that person reading it? Was it the entrepreneur? Was it the aspiring entrepreneur? Was it the person working at corporate that
or
maybe
or the wife
about?
Of an entrepreneur that wants to understand what they're getting themselves into?
There you go.
The husband, the spouse, right?
Right. There's everything, a little bit of everything for all of those people. But I think the book has resonated most with those who are grappling with issues of risk, right? Those that want to get in, but you know, these are the same people that sit by the pool and ask everyone else, you know, is it cold? Is it warm? And they stick a foot in, and they just have trouble actually taking the plunge. And this book really helps them to better take that plunge and have the information and prior knowledge so that they can do that and not run into as many mistakes as a lot of us have run into.
Now, do you see that people who come from a corporate background and then get into entrepreneur maybe a little later, what are some of the struggles that they have making that adjustment? Like, cause it's one thing, I work for a big company, and then I'm Bill, and I work for IBM, and then I call someone, and they're like, hey, Bill, you know, they call me right back, right? But now I'm Bill, and I got my own Bill Incorporated company, and I'm like, that same guy's not calling me back. I'm like, well, I don't understand. Last month, the guy couldn't wait to talk to me, and now the guy's never calling me back. How do they deal with that adjustment?
It's very difficult, and I'd say of the many people that I mentor, they're probably the most difficult. and, of course, that sounds very bad, but you know, I help them to get over the need to feel like there's a check coming, right?
And right.
That's a very huge obstacle.
Because they're used to every, the 15th and the 1st, their checking account goes up like magic.
Exactly.
And now it's an eat what you kill world. It's a little different.
Exactly. Another major challenge that they have often is the time that it requires, especially in startup mode, to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a part in the book that gets me in trouble quite often, and that part is business comes before family.
Oh.
Yeah. I get
okay,
a
so it's not a book
that.
For the spouse. we figure that out.
right. So, and you know.
Or is it business is part of the family now? Is
ooh,
that like
that's
the new
one.
Kid?
Like
new kid's the new kid.
Right. I like that one. I'll have to adopt that and send you a royalty.
Of course.
So is this your client group? Is this who you work with on a day-to-day basis in your practice? Or?
No, I actually have an advertising and communications firm.
Mm-hmm.
Or been around since 2000. I actually started as a sophomore in college. Our two biggest clients, one is Cadillac, and introducing their new models into the market and helping to change the perception that Cadillac is your grandfather's old boat car.
Right.
So
that's an old mobile.
Right. Exactly. And we're actually working with an alliance of the United States' largest banks and helping them to change consumer perception after the Great Recession. So we've got a lot of work.
We've got a lot of work to do.
Wow. I know, right? Yeah.
I'd love to see your proposal for that one. Like, what did you promise?
Well, you know, the good thing about that is a lot of the companies have realized that they've got to change, right? And I don't have any qualms when I go into the board meetings with the CMOs of B of A's or whatever and tell them, you know, the fees. You know, people are fed up with fees. You've got to change your fee structure.
Right.
So they're very open to the changes that we've suggested so that we can be effective in what we do.
So what was the chapter that was the hardest to gel for you, the hardest to get together, and it just took a while before it really felt like, okay, I finally got it?
That's a good question. I'd have to say the chapter about motivation. I think a lot of people, especially now, want to become an entrepreneur because it's the cool thing, especially in the sort of 18 to 25 area, Generation Y. I'm on the cusp of Y next. But a lot of them, they just want to be an entrepreneur. They have no idea. They don't know how to recognize an opportunity. They don't understand that 99% of business is solving a problem, and they just don't get it. So in writing that part was very difficult. Because I knew they would have a lot of difficulty in understanding that you have to have the right motivation, and it's just not a fad.
Now, how did, in your own life, you said you were a sophomore in college when this firm started. You're going to school, did an opportunity come up? Did they go, hey, Kevin, I need help doing something? And then you're like, oh, yeah, I guess I can do that. And then you're like, I got class on Tuesday, so I have to do it on Wednesday.
I mean, that's precisely what happened. A good friend of mine was running for SGA president, and he said it'd be really cool if the colleges in Atlanta had a website. And at that time, 1998, it was more of a technical challenge. Came to Atlanta, went to Morehouse College on a NASA scholarship, studied computer science. So at that time, it was more of a technical challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Did it, and the students flocked to it. Ironically, there were two countries that visited the website more than the colleges in the Atlanta area, and those were Japan and Germany. And so what they were doing was looking at the students to see what we were wearing.
Fashion
sense. Right. So, I had hits from Uzbekistan and all these different places.
So you're looking at that and you're like, why is this happening, right?
Right. I'm thinking, why is this happening? And then I got a call from a company you may know, jobdirect.com, called HR company called and said, how much does it cost to place a banner ad on the website? And so I put them on hold, and I'm not very happy about this, but if you remember on the old phones, you could click the mute button to give the impression that someone was on the other line. So I hit that, and I said, well, my mother's on the other line. And I went to Alta Vista, if you remember Alta Vista, web crawler, to try and find out how
Google
to price.
Before Google.
Google before Google. To try and price this banner ad. So I couldn't find
anything. So you're Googling, how much your banner ad?
Precisely.
This guy's real-time research.
Real-time. So I click over because my time, I said, this guy's going to hang up.
Right.
And I say $1,800.
So you just made up a number.
Made up a number. And you know what he said?
He said yes.
He said yes. The check will be there. Sure enough, the check came.
I said $1,800 a month.
Well, naturally, I kicked myself. I said, I should have said $5,000.
Right. You never know, right?
You never know.
Maybe you have a chapter in pricing in there in that book.
I do. And, what happened after that was when I got the check, it was in the name of the domain.
Right.
So I go to, it was the Wachovia bank, at the time. Mm-hmm. And this check? And they're like, no. Exactly. So I learned very quickly what an EIN number was, Articles of Incorporation.
So they had to make a company name.
There you go.
Is that cost him $1,800 to get all
right. Now he works with the banks, and so you shouldn't have to do this.
Right. It's weird how that happened. So that's how I got into business.
Yeah. Wow. On there, $1,800. Jump-starting your business.
There you
that's
go.
So assuming that that's no longer your sales and marketing process, how do you go to market now? How does the sales and marketing work for you now?
It's relationship based a lot. Networking, as was mentioned before, being in the right place at the right time. This particular opportunity with the banks came about because in 2009, I believe it was, I was able to find out about a credit card company that was doing credit card redlining.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked a lot with the congressmen and women to help form the Credit Card Act. And so I think they found me specifically for having the chutzpah to challenge the banks that were taking TARP money and say, well, what you're doing behind the scenes with a third-party vendor, what have you, is wrong. And with the computer science background, I know what you're doing.
Exactly, and I know who you are.
I know who you are.
And I know how many times you've done this.
Right, and with that whole situation, and I asked my wife, I said, I'm challenging Warren Buffett, the Ken Chenaults of the world. We may just disappear one day. And she said, no, it's fine. Go ahead and do it. And so I'm glad I did because, if you stand for something you believe in, I think it'll pay off, literally.
Now, in your book, how important is having a supportive spouse?
You know, I talk about that because in college I had a young woman that I was dating, and she was not very supportive. And I'm very graphic in the book, and it's probably the most popular post when I post to my blog. And, you know, I was coding one night, and she came in, and she was excited. I'll put it that way. And I said, "You've got to wait. I've got to code this." And she opened up her black book, and she said, "I don't need this." And she left.
Who's laughing now?
Well, yeah, it's sort of that kind of story. But I think it really resonates with the college crowd because mm-hmm. there are so many distractions in
right.
college and at that life point in your life, early 20s. And, you know, if you can stay focused, then it'll
good things can happen,
good
right?
things can happen, yeah.
So the process of writing the book, did you sit down every Saturday morning and knock out a couple of hours? Did you draw from blog posts? What is your book writing process?
Well, I like to do things in an intense way. I like to run half marathons, and you've got to follow a training regimen then. I actually ran for state legislator, so one of the things that I did then was to knock on doors for 100 days in a row. And then for the book, I said, I'm going to try this 100 days in a row type thing. So I would wake up at 5 a.m. in the morning mm-hmm. and write until about 9 a.m., and then I would write the outline of the next part I was going to write. During the evening in a sort of a relaxed environment. So when I got up at 5 a.m., I was ready.
The outline's already done.
Exactly. And I sort of had this epiphany when my son was born. I better get moving. So that was helpful.
So have you observed any parallels between the entrepreneur mind and the politician mind? Because you got to take a risk to run for office and put yourself out there, yeah?
I would say that running
that's
for
the next
office
book.
Is
the
harder.
Next
that's
book.
The next book.
Right?
I'm getting royalties all over the place.
Oh, really?
Could be. I mean, that was an experience. I mean, if I had to compare the two, I would say running for office was more difficult than running my business. I mean,
really?
I have a lot of respect for people who run for office now. And my wife, who's an anchor reporter, she came to the same conclusion. She said, you know, it's easy to ridicule or, you know, but the things that they go through to get where they are, it's just unbelievable. Relentless, nonstop perseverance. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got to be cut out.
Even like a local race. I mean, you don't still have to be for president.
Exactly. I was shocked. So who knows? I'm enjoying the private life now. Maybe later, get back into public.
So what is next for you? What where are you going to be putting your energy in the coming months?
Well, the energy is behind this financial services campaign. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are ramping up. I mean, as you can imagine, it's a huge project. When you have that many stakeholders at the table and trying to get them to agree on something is very challenging. So we want to make sure that's a success. So that's what's primarily on my plate. And as I mentioned, getting ready for the Jazz Festival.
And when is
And also selling some books, right?
Yes, selling some books. Selling. By the way, that's the May 25th, Memorial Day weekend. But the book has been doing well. Forbes reviewed it a couple of weeks ago. We launched with 1,276 pre-order sales.
Wow.
So now we've just got to keep the momentum going.
Right.
So where can we get our hands on this thing?
Sure, it's on Amazon.com, but you can go to the book's website, TheEntrepreneurMind.com, and I've been told that spelling entrepreneur is a challenge. So if you go to Google and type in The Entrepreneur Mind, you'll be able to find us that way too.
So you got all the URLs of all the typos of that?
You know what? I didn't think about that. That's a good idea. Maybe we need
man.
To do that.
We're going to send you a bill.
Yes.
And you got more business than you need over at Johnson Media, or should we give them those coordinates as well?
Yeah. Well, you can always accept more business, right? You can find us at johnsonmedia.com. Again, that's johnsonmedia.com.
Well, thanks so much for coming and visiting with us, man.
Thanks for having you guys. A lot of fun.
Yeah, well, we enjoy it. You going to hang with us? We got one more today.
I'm hanging out.
All right. Well, bringing it all home for us on Atlanta Business Radio, Lee, we have from Unishippers, Mr. Kevin Kinsler. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, you've been very polite. I've seen you nod your head. I thought I might have seen you take a few notes. You had a good time watching everybody, but now you're on the hot seat, right?
I know. These are tough acts to follow.
So tell us about Unishippers. What are you guys out there trying to do for folks?
Well, what Unishippers is we're a franchise-based organization. We're a third-party logistics shipping advisor, and our typical focus is with the small to medium-sized businesses. And we've been in business, the franchise, for about 25 years now. And we're the very first business-to-business reseller in the world for UPS. And not to confuse with like the UPS store, which is consumer-based.
Right.
We're strictly business-based. We're B2B, and we're the very first ones in the world.
So now what does like a business customer look like? What's their profile?
Yeah, well, a business customer could be anything. On our small parcel overnight UPS side of the business, it could be anything from a from attorney's office to a small business that just ships parcels. It could be a large organization that does a lot of parcel shipping with the web technologies that are out there today. On the freight side of the business, it's somebody that has a product that they're shipping, whether they have a product that they're inbound shipping, which would be the raw materials, or they have a product that's a finished product that they're shipping out to their customer base.
We could have used these guys a few weeks ago when we had the remote broadcast out in Denver, Colorado. We had, you know, the mixer board and the mics and all that stuff. And look, small business people, we don't know what we're doing. We need somebody. That's where the value is, somebody knows what they're doing to get it all done properly.
Yeah, you know, when you look at the larger organizations, they typically have the means. They have the staff. They have the resources
the scale.
To go out to make those things happen.
Yeah, they had that
didn't
little
have
scale.
The scale
is really
that
important.
That killed us.
Yeah, real important. Worst case scenario, get your bath scale, weigh yourself, put it in your hands, and step on it again. But, you know, you're right. The small to mid-sized business, they just don't have the resources. And consequently, what happens is they're really paying a premium, and they pay it over the, you know, with cost, but they're also paying it with service enhancements that they really should be getting, because that's going to help them grow their customer base. And they can't get it being a small to mid-sized business.
So now what's the advantage of going with you as opposed to just going to UPS directly?
Well, if you're on the small side of the business, if you're, you know, that let's call it 50 or employees or less, we'll use that kind of as a benchmark. Typically what's going to happen is you're going to be part of everybody. When you come into our program, what we do is we give you a dedicated account rep. We give you dedicated back-end support. We're a small business. We're here in Atlanta, but we've got 23 people that are in our freight team that are in the back-end office. And what these people are doing is they're providing day-to-day customized customer service to all of our customers. Once they ship it, they don't have to worry about it again. It's in our hands. We'll make sure it gets point A to point B, and if there's anything that happens along the way, hopefully we can get it taken care of, and our customers don't even know it happened.
So what's your backstory? How did you get involved in this business?
Well, my partner, Larry Nemeth, we've been in business together for about 13 years now. We have a couple other...
You're still speaking.
We're still speaking every now and then, Monday morning meetings, and we've been in business together for about 13 years. We own a couple other businesses, and what happened is we had customers that were coming to us saying, guys, you handle other things for us. Do you ever think you could do something with our shipping? Do you think you could coordinate our shipping? So we started looking at what it would take to put together a third-party logistics company. And when we started looking at that, we saw that there was a lot of cost that would be involved, a lot of technology that needed to be in the marketplace. We also saw that were some relationships that we needed to have as well with the shipping companies, with the freight companies, the UPSs, the YRCs, the Estes of the world. We needed to see that there needed to be these relationships. We took about a year doing our due diligence, and we saw that, you know, there was a barrier to entry. And the barrier to entry into the marketplace was a huge, huge amount of resources, dollars that would need to be devoted to technology. And then the relationships, we didn't have anything to bring to the table. If we went to a carrier and said, hey, we're getting ready to do this, what sort of rates could you give us? They said, come back after you've got some customers.
Right. They handed you the rate card and go, here, those are the rates.
That's right. It's like everybody else's.
Right.
So what we did is we started as a search, and we said, you know, there's got to be something out there. And we came across Unishippers. And Unishippers, it's nationwide. There's 290 offices around the country. And this year we'll do about $500 million. We're one of the largest 3PLs that's out there. And so we saw that, and as part of that year due diligence, we went in and we wanted to find out who the people were that were in the organization. You know, when you buy a franchise, they're only going to give you so much information. They're not going to tell you how successful the people are. They're not going to tell you if they're not successful. What they're going to tell you is, here's what we have to offer. you need to go figure it out. And that's what we did. We went out, we contacted existing franchises. We went in and we met with the people that were part of the franchisor to see if – I heard the culture come up many times in conversations today – to see if they were our right culture. We didn't want to have to come into somebody else's culture. We wanted the people be surrounded by people who think like us. And so in doing that, it was a right fit. And we started it 3 years ago. The very first year, we were the rookies of the year. We were the fastest growing, and through some of the criteria that they established, we were the best new franchise in the country. The last 2 years running, we've been gold and platinum. Last year, there's four categories. They by size, we were absolutely the number one franchise in the entire country. Prior to that, we were number two. And so we've got great people. They do a great job for our customer base, and we see our customers as strategic partners. What it is, it's a win-win. We help them grow their business, and guess what? They help us grow ours. So it's a strategic relationship, and it's really our people. I just can't talk enough about that.
Now, in your profile of a client for you, how many packages are they shipping?
You know, it could be one or it could be 100 a day. You know, we deal with the mid to small size business. So our sandbox is kind of limited when you look at it that way. If you're one of the largest that's out there, you've got all those resources that we can bring to the table. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're looking at a mid to small size, if you're looking, you know, on the freight side of things, you know, real sexy conversation here. If you're looking at freight, you know, you're looking at somebody that ships, you know, one to maybe 50 or 100, you know, pallets a week. If you're looking at the UPS, I mean, we've got customers that are shipping hundreds a week. So it's all over the board.
Now, you mentioned you have several other companies. Are they franchises as well?
No, those companies we actually started from scratch, and they're transportation related.
Mm-hmm. And then, so how was it different doing a franchise? Like, because that must have been a big decision on yours. You had started all these other things. You mentioned the challenges and the barriers of entry. But now that you're a franchisee, there's rules where when it's your own business, you're kind of making things up as you go along.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of the culture, is that we needed to make sure that we were in an environment that would allow us the freedom to go out and to grow our business the way that we felt that it would need to be handled. Now, the one thing that we did buy when we bought a franchise is that we truly did buy the seven secret spices. You know, when you buy a franchise, it's a shortcut. And what the franchise that you buy, if they're proven successful and you go out and talk to the people, they can really guide you along the way and say, look, here's best practices. Here's the things that we know that are going to work.
Right.
And that was real important when we were out there, because through our due diligence, we saw, you know, typically we were probably millions of dollars we would have needed to invest into technology. And we did not have the relationships with the carriers. And those are key. Without those, third-party logistics is nothing, because you need those carriers. It's not going on our truck. We're just making it happen.
So what are some of the things that the franchisor you feel are doing a really good job in servicing you as their client?
Well, you know, I think the things that they do just fabulous is, number one, is they've really got some dynamic people that are part of their office and that are part of their team. You know, so with that being said, that makes everything very easy for us. We can go in, we can give them our concerns as a group. I happened this year, I was elected to what's called the PAC committee, and I'm on the presidential committee for the United States. And so what we're able to do is we're able to go in and we're able to take our concerns to the franchisor, and they react on them immediately. You know, they're able to, our technology is it's there just isn't anybody out there that has the technology that is really a fit for that small to mid-sized business like we are. It's really, we're providing them with the sports car of technology. We give them what they need, not more than what they need. We give them exactly what we need, mm-hmm. so they can navigate it very easily and quickly. And then the relationships that the franchise brings to the table. They're highly respected with all of our carriers. And you know, we're in partnership with the top carriers in the country, and there's about 30 or 40 of them. Some of them are national, some of them are regional, and, you know, that's real important. When you ship things, when customers are out there shipping, they need to make sure that their product gets there on time, It gets there cost effectively, but then it gets there the way it was shipped, the way it left the dock, and that's real important. So quality is very important, and the carriers that we're associated with are the top-notch quality carriers in the country.
So you guys have obviously done so much right. Lessons learned, anything you would do differently if you had it to do again that might save some of our listeners a little heartache?
Maybe connect it with Unishippers a little sooner?
Yes and no. With starting out in any business, what we have found is that, you know, you go in with a good plan, and that's exactly what it is, and you have to have the ability to navigate the map a little bit differently if it's not getting you there the way that you thought it was. So, you know, it's nothing that I'm coming up with. People have told us whatever your plan is, whatever the dollar amount you've set out there, double it, okay? And then probably double it again, okay? But, you know, that's important. I think with us, the biggest thing was timing. You know, we started our due diligence right as the bubble started to pop. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we in the shipping industry, something that's very unique about our industry is we feel what's going to happen in the economy before it's on the street. When the inventories start reeling back, when the raw materials stop being shipped, we start feeling it. So we actually started feeling through the due diligence process, we started seeing the economy slow down before you were reading it in the newspaper and seeing it on the news.
So is the reverse true, that you know that when it's
Absolutely.
So how are we doing?
You know, we were doing pretty good about a year and a half ago. It was popping. Right now it's kind of flat. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe and if you look at the feds, you know, they go to UPS constantly. They're going to UPS and they're looking at the parcel cart count. Huh. And what that's able to do is that's able to give the feds a little precursor to what's happening in the marketplace as well. So right now I'd say the economy's up, way up from when we started the business. Right now I think it's kind of getting a little flat right now. I think people really are concerned about what's going to happen in 2014 with some of the new obstacles that we're going to have to navigate as business owners.
How about designs for you? Do you have any idea of maybe opening multiple franchises, or are you fat and happy where you are?
Well, no, we're always looking at some new businesses. We've actually got a new business that we're getting ready to get off the ground right now. The one good thing about Unishippers is that when we bought the franchise, one of the things that we bought was a territory. And with a franchise, you typically have limitations on your marketing territory.
So what's your territory?
Well, our territory now, nice to say, through going back to Unishippers as the owners, going back to them and telling them that, you know what, that's really not where the marketplace is. We now have no territory. They've opened up the entire United States to each one of our franchises so we can sell anywhere to anybody, any place in the country or really any place in the world, because we also do international, we do air freight, we do overseas, ocean, we do it all. So we can sell anywhere to anybody.
Now, are customers mostly here in Atlanta or are they everywhere?
You know, what's interesting is because of our existing customer base we had, that's why we got into the business. We're probably about at 80-20%. 80% of our customers are outside of Atlanta, and only about 20% are in Atlanta.
Why is that?
Because of our existing customer base that we had in some of our other businesses. Mm-hmm. Those were the people that initially got us into the business. They said, you know, hey, can you help us here? We went out, we found that solution, and they said, hey, here's our business. Take care of our freight. Take care of our small parcel for us.
Now, do you want to expand your Atlanta base or your...
Yeah.
Is that one of your initiatives you're working on?
Yeah, it is. Right now, we're in the process of hiring some more shipping consultants in the Atlanta marketplace. And, you know, our goal this year is we're looking at 100% growth this year again. And hopefully we're going to be, once again, the Platinum Award winner for Unishippers in 2013.
So where can our listeners learn more? Coordinates, website, phone number?
Yeah, well, unishippers.com. That's going to get you in, and that's going to allow you to see everything we do. That's going to let you see our freight product. That's going to allow you to see our truck, full truckload, our small parcel, UPS. And then here in Atlanta, the best way to track me down is 770-551-8841, and that's 770-551-8841.
Good stuff. Well, thank you for being part of the show.
Well, thanks very much. I appreciate you guys having me.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and all of the Business Radio X family. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.